Are we back?
Yep, I think so.
Good.
So, I think things are starting to wind down as we do have one more presentation next week, but then I think we have a hiatus on the presentations until the fall. So we'll start. But if people are interested, just have to let us know and we'll put people on the schedule.
Yeah, we have a few possibilities that we had a list of. We just haven't followed up with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think I was one of those. I'd be happy to do it. I think it's the first week of June or next fall. That helps.
Is this Joe?
Yeah, this is Joe.
Yeah, okay. Well, we need to contact Marion to set that up. First week of June or the fall. Okay?
Good.
I think that was what she had me list today.
Okay, well, there's only a few of us, but are there any other announcements besides about the Clean Facebook page?
Well, I noticed that we have events now on the Clean Facebook page, too. Something we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, did you put them there?
No.
No, oh, maybe Jacqueline put them there.
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's see.
Those all coming together, that's good. Those are two major hurdles. Be able to put events there.
Yeah. So if there's things people would like to see on this page, I mean, we're trying to put together a schedule so it's not burdensome on any one person, but to post information about, we want to drive traffic to the Clean Pathway site, and we are going to be starting to have more serious conversations about integrating the Climate Literacy Network's website into the Clean Pathway site so that they are co-located, because people are, for the most part, people don't distinguish them, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, this is obviously a conversation we've been having internally in Clean, but are we getting comfortable with the idea that there's Clean, which is essentially a larger version of CLN, Climate Literacy Network, and there's a Pathway Project that is also part of Clean. Is that kind of the thinking now?
I kind of think of the Climate Literacy Network as the overarching group.
That's how I've seen it, certainly.
And the Clean Pathway Project is to identify and catalog resources and to provide professional development around the use of those resources. However, what I'd like to happen is that as we evolve the Climate Literacy Network page to basically replace the community page, it'll obviously then have to have all of the information we provide on the community page now, but what I'd also like to happen is if we have efforts like Clean New England, or if there's an effort that you have out there, that we have a venue through that page to link to the network in the Pacific Northwest, for example, or Clean New England, where that group has its own page and conversation, but that others can get to it through the Clean Pathway portal, and then they can make use of the resources and the professional development of the Clean Pathway portal. So my sense is to try to integrate them much as we can.
And just not quite the distinction.
Well, we don't have the physical pages in the same place, but the URLs are already written that way. And as you might know, what really prompted me to say, all right, we just need to replace this community page with the Climate Literacy Network page was that when we had a webinar for the NASA Global Climate Change Education Projects, in which they had posted some things. So I went to their website to find the PowerPoint from the presentation, and I saw on the left menu bar there, it's a Climate Literacy Network. So I clicked on it, and it went to the Pathway Portal. The whole idea is that these should be integrated and working together. So to try to explain to people why or how they may be separate is just working against what we want to happen. So I've had, the only time that it's become an issue is when I've gotten, I mean, it's not a big issue, but I've had people say, well, can I become a member of the Clean Pathway Portal? And, well, you can be a member of the Climate Literacy Network, but, you know, so that, in that way it's different. And there was, you know, so, and the other thing was that there's individuals, some, I've had some inquiries for organizations to become members, and right now it's a set up for individuals to be members. So your organization is represented if you're a member, so, and we may think down the line, if we want to have organizational members, it's sort of along the model of the ESIP Federation, the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners, which has organizational members, and if you're a member of an organization, then you too are a member. So, for example, Turk is a member of the ESIP Federation, and I lead the Turk's effort, but if anybody's associated with my project and comes to the ESIP Federation meeting, they're associated, in terms of being associated with a member, they're associated with Turk.
Yep.
So, and, you know, that can be, so when Doug Cohen was, Doug Cohen is mostly associated because of the Climate Literacy Network, but he wants to, he's been bringing college students to create videos at of the efforts at the ESA, at the ESA Federation around climate change. They contacted me, and they asked if he's a member of my ESIP, and I said, well, sure, he can be associated with my ESIP if he has to be associated with any particular group, because that makes the most sense. But it's more of people just being associated with somebody so that they know that they're not going to wreak havoc, I guess.
But, you know, it's that broad, it opens up a broader question here, and that is, something we have talked about before is that, do we want to talk about membership in the Climate Literacy Network? We've never set up a mechanism for that, other than...
Oh, well, the way it works now is people send me an email and I add them to the listserv.
Yes.
I do, if I don't recognize the name, I have Sarah just do a search to make sure that it looks like they're coming from a reputable organization and not...
Right.
I haven't spent a lot of time looking, you know, at people. You know, usually I can tell from their email address, and it's fine.
Right.
Just this particular person I had never heard of before, and so I just wanted to check.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
There is no other mechanism right now, and I don't know that we can really think in terms of doing that in any more rigorous way unless we get bigger funding.
Well, I guess that's really it, is that, and we've talked about this before, the idea, oh, well, do we do a little bit of a membership thing or something that, you know, people put in, you know, $20 or something a year or something like that.
And the problem is administering that, and
that
we're not, the Climate Literacy Network is not an organization that can take money. I mean, this was one of the things we had with the ESIP Federation. The Federation of Earth Science Information Partners was basically started off as a collection of projects that was funded by NASA, and basically had to form a 503C arm that is just the fiscal, so the Foundation for Earth Science is an entity that can take and distribute money on behalf of the ESIP Federation. There's only 3 employees, and really they're there to just serve the larger group, but that's what, before that, it was a major headache to get money. Even when people were willing to give us money, the mechanism by which they could do that was really hard. So, for example, 1 year I was chair of the Education Committee. The previous year, another person was chair of the Education Committee, and they had added the Education Committee's budget to his grant. So what it meant is when I became chair, even though he was no longer chair, the only way I could get the money was I had to get the money from him. So it kind of went from NASA to his project to me. And so now it all goes through this 503C, so there's not this intermediate person who has nothing to do with the committee anymore. I mean, it got really, really awkward because they had this, it was added to a grant which they were doing as a project, but it was for a totally separate activity.
So Tamara, is it possible that if we needed a financial agent that we could use this, I can't remember the name, Foundation for, was it Earth something?
The Foundation for Earth Science? Well, it's possible if they're willing, although they have put in place a policy where they don't want to be just a pass-through for money.
Okay.
So that they would not take a grant where all the money was just supposed to be for the benefit of the Climate Literacy Network without them being involved in some significant way.
Yeah.
So...
That makes sense. It's just, I guess the question is, like, how do we sort of grow the network and be able to do what we...
I think that we're going to go after the CSEP2 funds, and I've also talked to some consultants that Turk has around identifying places for money, and they've identified a few other potential places where we could apply for a similar level of funding to do that. So what I'm envisioning is that next round of grant would be to facilitate the Climate Literacy Network and potentially some regional efforts.
Right.
So we had to see. The problem right now is that the solicitation for the CSEP2s is not coming out until the fall. And so we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know if they're going to continue to say national coordination is premature. And they're also going to ask for this strategic plan, most likely, because the CSEP1s are all required to develop a strategic plan. So we sort of have to figure out a way of... I mean, I think we have a lot of pieces in place, but a formal strategic plan we don't actually have.
Is that something that we ought to be working on over the summer?
Until the solicitation comes out, I wouldn't put a whole lot of...
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
Time, other than sort of just getting people in the loop, I've been talking to people about potentially down the road, just to get them thinking about it now, because one of the things... that was required in the CSEP1s was to have a significant participation by learning scientists.
Yep.
And so I've contacted and had a conversation with Tina Grotzer at Harvard Graduate School for Education. She is a geoscience education researcher, and I also have, Karen McNeil also is, and she's a PI of a CSEP, as is Julie Labarkin, and just sort of getting them to start thinking about the kinds of activities that might make sense in the absence right now of a solicitation, which sort of spells out, the kinds of things to pursue. But what are the kinds of things that they might be interested in?
Yep.
And I think that might help us get there, because I think we have the other pieces. We have the in terms of people, we have the educators and we have the scientists. So we'll have to see how this plays out. I mean, in terms of national coordination, what is it that they're going to want, if they're going to even ask for that? Or are they going to continue to ask for something more of a regional scale, in which case we'll focus on continuing this effort, but as part of, like, Clean New England, which we have in place but is at a very low level now because we didn't get funded.
Right, exactly.
So...
I'm curious whether others have sort of ideas around sort of doing our own sort of internal strategic planning. Tamara's point is to continue to build it from the regional networks, and certainly Clean New England there. I'm involved in the one in the Great Lakes, and there's other regional ones that are already in place. Art will talk about the Pacific Island stuff next week. So,
right. And Karen McNeil leads the one in the southeast United States. So, I think we have connections to a significant number of them. And I don't know how open the solicitation will be practically to groups that did not get CSEP1 funding.
Right.
I will tell you that while they had said that in March there was an opportunity for the CSEP1s to apply for supplement funding.
Right.
And that was supposed to be theoretically open to the 2009 awardees, which included the Clean Pathway. But it didn't matter what ideas I pitched or discussed with them. It was in their minds, to get a supplement, you have to be within the scope of your current work.
Right.
And so the scope of our current work and what the solicitation outlined for supplements was mutually exclusive. There was every time I came up with an idea that matched one, they told me it didn't match the other, even if I tried to make an argument that it did. So I ended up not submitting any supplement proposals because it was clear it wasn't going to be worth my effort.
Exactly. Yeah, that's an interesting process or a problem.
Surprise, Doug came on.
Ah.
Hi, Doug.
Is there anyone else but you guys on right now?
We have Scott and Joe and Caroline and Tamara and you. I don't know if anybody else. Has anybody else called in?
Candace.
Anna Goldis called in.
Hi, Anna. And Candace.
Carol Landis.
Carol. So we have a few more people.
Alex.
I just have, since I heard only parts of today, I came in late. I came in when you're talking about the membership, and then, you know, this talk about strategic planning and identity of the network is so right on schedule because it's just the right time to think about that against the backdrop, not only of the grants that you're referring to, but what does the country need right now?
Right.
So there are a lot of, you know, some of the people I've been colleagues with since the network's launch have been talking about this offline, that, you know, to revisit the purpose and the format of this network is perfect timing. Maybe we should devote a call to that with people reflecting on their thoughts about that and pooling them and then having a meeting on that.
Yeah.
That might be worthwhile.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
Well, we know, Carolyn, that you would love that.
Oh, just quiet down,
please. She's my main partner in diagnosing our possibilities for the country.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. We have Governor Scott in Florida. As long as I don't listen to him, I can move forward with my optimism.
Oh, boy.
Oh, the man is annoying.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And Scott, is Scott Carey on?
Yeah.
Yes?
Are you still doing the rapid response team, Scott?
Oh, I don't think that's my stuff.
Oh, who was that? Who was the one who was pushing the climate change rapid response team, because I need to reinvigorate my base with that contact so that when we have this misinformation on TV, radio, in the print, they know who to send it to. Remember at some point somebody had sent us that?
Yeah, somebody talked about that. Now, was it Stuart Scott, perhaps?
I don't remember. I mean, I'm sorry, my notes, I'll go back and look, but that's
about,
the type of thing...
There's another Scott Carlin.
Maybe that's who it is.
I met
but
Scott
do you all
Carlin
remember?
The other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you Google climate change science rapid response team, the outfit comes up. And I just want to make sure that everybody on this call considers them credible and real, and let's feed them. Because I had people saying, let's create a rapid response team. And I said, no, one exists.
Yeah.
And then I started backtracking to try and find it. And I just kind of need some insights from this group when you...
We certainly had this discussion. I definitely remember it in the last 2 months or so. That whole notion that if something comes up and, you know, this sort of bad science being put out there on in the news media, that we respond to it very quickly and try to correct any misconceptions.
Yeah.
I don't remember who was doing it.
Tamara, who, I mean, wasn't it, maybe I have this Scott wrong, but wasn't he organizing the information on the Climate Literacy Network site for us? In terms of
that's Scott Carley, but he's that's not, there wasn't any other Scott. Was there any other Scott?
on the website they had Scott Mandia.
Maybe it's Mandia. Anyway,
yeah,
we'll find it. Either way.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. We need to figure out what that's all about.
So for those of you who called in late, we do have our Clean Facebook page, and we do have a name now that we have 33 people liking it. It's CleanNet, the same as our URL. So you can invite people to come to visit it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We'll be adding more material hopefully weekly, I think, Tamara, is the plan, isn't it? To
I think we'll have postings of at least twice a week. There will be probably a brief summary from our calls, and then there'll be other activities that are going on with respect to the Clean Pathway portal, trying to drive traffic to that portal. We'll probably feature some of the, certainly the professional development programs, and also then some of the resources that we have in the collection. So, and we can also, so there's an events thing here, so we can, if people let us know, we can add events.
Correct. Well, I think that it's probably, I don't know who suggested this, but I would love to have a full, thoughtful, put the cards on the table about the scope of work of this network and
okay.
a focus. Because
well,
I
we
really,
can certainly do that.
Yeah, this you guys have really energized me in all the right ways, but I do have a frustration that we're not capturing some of the, the rapid response team is just one tiny example, but I want to capture and maintain contact with these good things so that we aren't just talking about great things and then forgetting about them, you know?
Right.
Because I am guilty of that, is what I'm saying, and I need your help.
Yes, well, I think we all need help in that category.
So much stuff.
Okay, well, we can start having a conversation online about that and then sort of get some input, and then I'm planning to have a call dedicated to it.
Yeah.
Well, Tamara, you did a great job trying to frame it about a month or two ago when you kind of put the cards on the table about the Clean Pathway versus CLN. And I think mm-hmm. that was a great framework from which to then say, okay, speaking of as a network, are we accomplishing what we want, or what should we be
mm-hmm.
focusing on? And I think that's sort of a healthy discussion to have now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that's maybe something scheduled for after Art Talk on the 17th.
Yeah. We could potentially do that on the 24th.
Yeah.
Let me put that in the book now. So Art's on the 17th?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's scheduled.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
in Pacific Island, what is it, Climate
yeah, yeah.
Partnership or something like that. It's one of the C-STEP 1 projects.
Right.
So I have a question which I sent just to Scott. I don't know if you got this early in the morning, but I'm interested who knows about geocoded spatial transparent metrics.
Wow.
GSTM.
Geocoded transparent metrics?
Geocoded spatial transparent metric, GSTM. And I met this woman at the UN Commission on Sustainable Development last week who was presenting, a biologist from Missouri Botanical, and Her former husband is Peter Raven, who was a National Science Award guy and MacArthur Fellow.
Oh, you met Pat. Sorry.
I met the wife. I met...
Yes. Her name is Pat, isn't it?
Tamara Raven.
Tamara.
Tamara. And she's an amazing educator for using mapping and spatial visualizations for biodiversity loss.
Uh-huh.
So she's proposing some mapping projects to use this carbon, it's a cube that goes above the ground and below the ground through geomapping. Very interesting stuff. So I just was curious how well known, obviously, if this acronym is new, GSTM, I can forward some info. But
yeah, that would be
Scott, you should have it in your inbox.
I should. I'm just looking for it.
Anyway, I just was checking that. She's a potential colleague and member for the down the road. She didn't know about our network.
Mm.
Deeply committed educator.
The Ravens are Salt of the Earth Public Garden people, and Peter, her husband, is on everybody's radar in the public garden world as the king of conservation and biodiversity and hotspots. And she,
right,
in her own right, is a dynamo and extremely bright and committed. So if you get her focused and on board, I think she'd be an asset.
Well, I had two meetings with her this week in New York, so she's ready to join and do something. So I put her together with a finance guy yesterday. And we'll see.
So if she wants to be connected to the Climate Literacy Network, have her send me her email.
Well, she wants to get her mapping thing as a global resource, and I told her about the network as one means. So I will. I'll tell her that, you know, you can. She can approach you, and we'll
mm-hmm.
see how she could present for us too.
Yes, yeah, she okay. could. That would be great.
Yeah.
Very good. I'll do that.
Good.
Well, there's a rumor that it's lunchtime in New York.
Are there any other announcements or topics people would like to discuss?
This is Carol. I just have a I need to get information, reliable information, about economic analyses of climate change impacts. And part of the reason is because I've come to the reluctant conclusion that explaining the science and or presenting the science, no matter how many ways or in how many forms, doesn't seem to convince people, and that we're just going to have to go down to the voting with your wallet thing. So if anyone has some resources that are, you know, not too technical and statistical, but just have good and reliable information about potential economic impacts, that's what I'd really like to know.
You might send an email out to the listserv and see if anybody, because you get a hit a much broader group than just those on the phone now. I mean, anybody can provide you things here that are on the phone, but that'll give you a little bit broader outreach. And there are people that are a part of the Climate Literacy Network that could potentially help.
Okay, thank you.
And off the top of my head, Carol, is I would look at the Stern report initial, you know, the one from England. Nicholas Stern, that you know, framed all of this stuff. Though it may be a little bit more technical, but there's lots of other work going on too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
And Carol, you know, I'm really interested in what you get from them. So let's share them all with all of us. I think you're
okay.
Right. People need to, we need to break this down to a concrete personal thing, and sometimes those numbers just become as complicated as the science itself,
yeah.
You know, the economics. So, again, you know, part of my whole thing with this group is trying to get the nuggets that people
mm-hmm.
want the lay public to know. I mean, I'm not talking about the scientific public and science students and science teachers. They should know it all. But the voting public just needs nuggets. And part of the proposal I'm working on now is literally to have these multitude of conversations with lay people right where, you know, their hearts are. And I'm looking for that sort of stuff too, Carol. I think I'm finding the vehicles and the engagement and the extrinsic motivation to get them intrinsically hooked and all of that. So the economics is what really gets them, and they can quantify some without too much jargon, you know. So
yeah,
somebody in here has to be an economic guru. Remember how those lovely guys gave me the nuggets early on energy and
mm-hmm.
I think what was Joel Rosenberg had some great stuff.
Yes, he did. I actually kept his and a few others. I was trying to be the nugget collector for this group, but it just became overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nuggets for lay people is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to get tons of information distilled down to some core messages that might resound, and economics
mm-hmm.
is definitely one I'm not up on, so I'm glad Carol brought that up.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks, all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh.
Okay, any more comments?
No, I look forward to the next 2 weeks, though. I think Art will be great, and I think if we can schedule a discussion on the focus of the groups, it would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we'll do that. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you, Tamara.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye. Bye.